In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a six-part podcast from CBC. Available now.
This is a CBC podcast.
Hey, I'm Tom Power. Welcome to Q. So check this out. Before HBO started filming their big new hit show, The Sympathizer, they decided they were going to search the world for their actors. So the show, if you don't know, is based on this Pulitzer Prize-winning novel about a Vietnam War-era spy. So what they did was they put out a global call for actors of Vietnamese descent. And after reviewing person after person after person, like, you know, wide search all over the world, they come across this actor from Montreal, Fred Nguyen Khan. So Fred's an actor. Fred's a stunt performer. He speaks three languages. He started learning martial arts when he was four. He eventually studied kung fu with Shaolin monks in China and lived in a monastery. I mean, if that resume doesn't scream spy thriller, I don't know what does. The Canadian writer and actor Don McKellar is one of the co-creators. You might know him from Twitch City or his film Last Night. And the other co-creator is the legendary filmmaker Park Chan-wook, who made the classic South Korean film Old Boy, considered one of the greatest action films of all time. So, Fred Nguyen Khan dropped by the Q studio to talk about the series, to talk about shooting fight scenes with this legendary action director, about acting in Vietnamese for the first time. But I'll tell you, even if none of that grabs you, this only happens once in a blue moon, where a guest comes in that we haven't talked to before, and right off the bat, he just wows us. Here's our conversation. Hey, how are you?
Hi, thanks for having me.
This must be a bit of a roller coaster ride for you. You've been on. You feeling that way?
Absolutely, and I don't like roller coasters. I'm scared of heights, actually. As a stuntman, that's not a good look. You know?
You're right. As a stuntman, you really should not be afraid of heights. That's about it.
I'll do it anyway. As well. I'll be terrified.
You know, I would watch a show about a stuntman who's afraid of heights, to be honest.
Most people are afraid of doing what they're supposed to be doing.
What do you mean?
The stunt, we're not daredevils. Like, it's very calculated. So if it's still scary.
You're blowing my mind right now. Because I have watched movies. And, you know, you're aware that it's a stunt performer.
Yeah.
And I have watched them, you know, leap off a bridge or, you know, fall out of a car. And I've just assumed as a scaredy cat myself, that just they're just built to different things than I am, and they're not afraid of things.
You know what? It's scary. You do it anyways because you have to do it. It's your job. And the reason why it's, you know, why you're scared is because you have to do it over and over again. It's not like you're a daredevil and you do it once and everyone cheers. And, you know, it might be that way. Like, you might get it in one take, but you have to always do it precisely. You have to follow it at the right spot in case there's a camera right there. You don't want to hit it. You don't want to hit anyone else. You don't want to hurt yourself. Longevity is key. So calculate it safely. It's training and fear.
What's the most afraid you've ever been doing a stunt? Can you think of one?
A high fall. I'm scared of heights.
Yeah. When did you do one?
I did. I did film a thing. It wasn't really a stunt. It was more like to showcase the attraction, but it was a bungee jump. I forgot where it was, but it was like, I think it was 200 feet in the air and there's water underneath, but still, if I hit the water, sure, but it's still scary, you know?
And you're afraid of heights.
Yeah.
And you had to jump 200 feet as a stunt.
Plus I can't swim. So if it's like the double thing for me where heights and then, okay, I survived the height, but now I'm in water.
But we haven't even started talking about the show yet. We will.
Yes, we will.
How do you do it? I mean, I would freeze and crouch and cry.
You do that after. You cry afterwards.
Well, I think what I'm asking is there something in you, that's something you're training, something in you that's just like you have to do it anyway?
I think it's the you just don't think about it because if you do, you start getting scared of it, you know? And sometimes people will be counting down, which is kind of more scary in a way, you know? So when we did that jump, actually, they were counting down from three and I actually jumped at two because I'm like, if I wait for one, I'm not going to do it.
I mean, this interview is, we can end here. I'm already.
But I don't recommend you jump from two whenever there's a countdown because there might be a safety thing.
Let me say that again. Wait for the one, wait for the go.
Yeah, wait for the go.
Water slides, that kind of thing. There might be someone in the water slide. Yeah. Congratulations on this. I loved watching the show.
Thank you.
Tell me about this casting call.
Right. It was really serendipitous in a way because it was during the pandemic. I had unfortunately caught COVID, and so I was stuck at home for a week. And during that week, a friend of mine said, you know, you're stuck at home. I'm going to lend you this book you could read. She knows I play video games. I don't know why she thought I would read a book. But she said, no, don't worry about it. It's a Vietnamese story. It's funny. It's satire. And I'm like, okay, I'll start it. But when I started reading it, I'm not really a fast reader. I tend to reread stuff because my mind keeps wandering a lot. But I remember very specifically the words that Viet Thanh Nguyen was writing. It was like very easy to imagine what I was reading. So I got really into it. And then halfway through the book, my agent sends me the audition for The Sympathizer.
No connection.
Wow. And this was before they opened it up to the world.
Yeah.
I think the casting director, Jennifer Venditti from New York, she reached out to agents first. And then once that was done, she reached out to the world. And I remember reading the casting breakdown, and my memory is bad too. So I saw The Sympathizer, and I'm like, this sounds really familiar. While I was just like, reading this book at the same time, like, oh, wow, that's
hold on.
Deja vu here. And then I go back to the book, and this sounds familiar too. Wasn't there a breakdown for this? But that was such a...
Oh, man.
I took it at, well, this is such a weird universe type thing where I don't usually read books. All of a sudden I'm reading this thing and then this happens. And for the first time, at least to my knowledge, it's a Vietnamese story in a big Hollywood production.
Yeah.
From the perspective of Vietnamese people.
Yeah. As opposed to,
To usually when it's the Vietnam War, it's the perspective of the American soldiers. Yeah, yeah, and when the war ends, the story ends for them. Yeah. Whereas for the refugees from the Vietnam War, their story begins. And no one knows how that story goes. So it's really cool to be able to tell that story.
Was it also, I mean, is it a rare thing for you to, because it's shot in, set in the U.S. and in Vietnam, is it a rare thing for you in your career to have a gig where you're speaking Vietnamese?
This is the first time. My first time ever I get to act in Vietnamese.
Tôi tầm xa người bắn rồi. Dễ là tốt lắm. Tụi nó đang di chuyển vị trí thôi. Tụi nó không muốn bị lộ.
Usually, I'm based in Montreal, so I get a lot of work where it's playing a different type of Asian person. It's I'm never Vietnamese. A lot of screenwriters, producers, they create characters that are Asian, but they're not familiar with the Vietnamese culture. Mm. Whereas, you know, Japanese, Korean, Chinese culture has been in media for a long time.
Yeah.
So you can do research more easily in that sense. The only thing people are exposed to when it comes to the Vietnamese characters or Vietnamese people, it's the war.
Yeah.
And again, you don't get the perspective from the Vietnamese. So it's all from, you know, Hollywood movies where it's the American soldiers. So I don't ever get to audition for Vietnamese characters. No one wants to write Vietnamese characters. There's no stories to tell if you don't know about it, you know? So this was the first time, and it was like... it's a blessing because I get to be part of this new thing that's never been done. But it was also very scary because my Vietnamese is very rusty. I spoke it very fluently when I was young, but I grew up, you know, there's no Vietnamese friends, French school actually. So I'm fluent in French and in English, but my Vietnamese was lost throughout the years. And now I had to get it back because I got the role somehow. So,
did you speak it at home?
Yeah, but it's very, it was mixed in with a lot of French and a lot of English as well. And I had a funny realization actually where after we wrapped The Sympathizer, I went to Vietnam for a month just to vacation. And I noticed that my Vietnamese is very outdated because it's, I learned it from my parents and they left during the 70s and they never learned new slang. So it's kind of like the equivalent of an American family leaving America in the 70s and then their children speaking with disco slang, you know?
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, it's kind of weird.
But what about in the show? I mean, did you have to do any dialect work to speak? Because it's Southern Vietnamese dialect?
Yeah, so I actually lucked out in this case where what may seem like a weakness because of my outdated language was perfect for this character and this show.
Why?
Because my character is a Southern Vietnamese man that is set in the 70s.
Oh.
So I speak exactly how I'm supposed to be speaking.
Wow. Yeah. Geez, that worked out pretty well, didn't it?
Pretty good.
In this show, you worked with Park Chan-wook, the director who did Old Boy, one of the most celebrated action movies of all time. We talked a little bit about this when you were doing your stunt work. You yourself as a martial artist. Don McKellar just told us that they put more martial arts in the show because you were so good at it, because you were so compelling.
They never told me this.
You should get me to negotiate your rate. That's what that is.
Come on, Don.
I'm Tom Power. You're listening to Q. Coming up, more of my conversation with Fred Wynn Cohn.
Are vegans actually unhealthy?
Does cannabis ruin your sleep?
And why are so many men taking testosterone supplements? I'm Mitch.
And I'm Greg.
And we're the creators of the popular YouTube channel ASAP Science.
Every week on our podcast Side Note by ASAP Science, we explain the science behind a controversial subject with recent research, up-to-date studies, and ridiculous stories so you are entertained while, bam, simultaneously learning.
We're here to make science make sense.
Download Side Note by ASAP Science wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tom Power. You're listening to Q. You're in the middle of my conversation with Fred Wynn Cohn, the Vietnamese-Canadian actor and stunt performer who's one of the stars of the new HBO series, The Sympathizer. We've been talking about putting his martial arts skills to good use in this series. But I wanted to know about like the early days of his training in martial arts. And we found this like comment that it runs in the family, and I asked him about it. Here's the rest of our conversation. You come from a family of martial artists?
Yeah, I started when I was 4 years old. I didn't really know. I thought it was normal. I thought every kid was doing martial arts because that's what I knew. I have a lot of uncles that do martial arts. Some uncles teach it.
But what do they do?
One of my uncles practices a traditional Vietnamese style called Sa Long Kung, and it's from the Binh Dinh province. My father was a Taekwondo guy, and I actually learned from a Shaolin teacher, so a friend of a family that would come over and teach, and it was that was the style that not that I preferred necessarily, because I didn't really like martial arts back then.
No,
I was a kid. I wanted to play around. I wanted to, you know, play Nintendo.
Yeah.
But I remember the Shaolin style was the one that was more natural for me. Like the movements came more naturally to me. So that's the one where I felt that I was better at. So I just continued doing that one.
Why did you want to become a film and TV martial artist? That's a whole other path.
That is a path, yeah. That is the one that I am hoping I will somehow achieve eventually. I just grew up watching kung fu movies. I love kung fu movies. Bonded with my father over kung fu movies.
Like what? Which ones?
36 Chambers.
Yeah.
The Deadly Venoms. And Bruce Lee movies. You know, Jackie Chan, of course. But my favorite one is Jet Li, because the aesthetics of his movements and his shapes, his lines, is what I aspired my lines to be like. So I was always. So, and he practices a style called Wushu, which is a more performance version of Shaolin style.
Right. So you were watching those films with your dad and going like, I want to do that.
Yeah. And my thing is, since I was a kid, actually, was creating fight choreography with action figures.
Oh, okay.
That was my most favorite thing. That's my game. Like, that's how I would play. And I realize now why I love creating fight choreography so much is because that's what I was doing as a kid. Just found a way to adapt it as a career, you know?
So how was the experience of doing it in this show?
Man, when you get to shoot a fight scene directed by legendary director Park Chan-wook.
That's what I'm talking about, yeah.
You know, like for me, as a choreographer, the Old Boy hallway fight is one of, if not arguably the most influential fight scene of all time, top 5 best fight scene in my book. So I was hype. I was like, oh, I get to have my old boy moment. I didn't know it was going to, you know, because in the old boy, it's a one-er. It's a, like a long sequence, no cuts, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah. And so I was like, oh, well, I would love to have that with Director Park.
Okay.
But so I show up on set. The first fight scene that we shot, I don't know how many you've seen so far from the show. Two episodes?
Yeah.
Okay. So you may not have seen this one, but the one in the beer garden, I have two fight scenes in the show, and I didn't realize they were all going to be shot as one-ers.
Oh, yeah.
Like one long take, no
cuts.
That's
very challenging.
It is. And I guess that's just Parks. Like Parks doesn't, Director Park doesn't like shooting coverage. He just likes to let it, and, you know, so...
Well, maybe I should do some translation here. So what that means is when you watch something on TV, even though they're cutting back and forth between different camera angles, that's generally been shot 5 or 6 or 7 times. Covered, it's all kind of caught together. That's something called coverage. Yeah. When you say these really complex, really choreographed fight scenes are one-ers, that means it's all shot in one thing. And how long would these one-ers be?
The longest one was about 3 minutes.
So that's 3 minutes where no one can mess up.
Yeah. And not only that, and because because it's not complicated enough already, let's add, because Director Park Chan-wook is just such a perfectionist. Not only am I fighting for 3 minutes without any cuts, I had no rehearsal. It was the first day of shoot when I landed in Thailand, so everyone was jet lagged. And on top of that, I'm fighting in the background while a 3 minute dialogue is happening in the front. So if I mess up, they have to start over. If they mess up, I have to start over. And the three of us, all jet lagged, were just like, I got you, you got me, yeah, okay, we good? And, you know, and we were just leaning on each other so heavily. It's insane that we pulled that off.
Hey, mình nói gì vậy?
Chú sĩ.
Nói lại coi. Gọi bạn tao là gì?
Nó đang đánh lòng tao. Nó đang giúp con.
They call that baptism by fire. Yeah. You know? That's what they call that. That's what they call that.
I don't like it. I don't like this baptism by fire thing.
Can I ask a Shaolin question?
Of course.
You grew up in Quebec, but eventually you get so serious about martial arts that you end up going to learn in a Shaolin temple. You live and train at the temple. What does a typical day look like?
Typical day.
What time are you getting up?
When the sun comes up. This was before smartphones, so I wish I had a phone to document stuff more.
Where in China was it?
It's in the Hunan province of China, which is in the middle. And the Shaolin Temple is actually on Songshan Mountain, which is like, you see it in movies and that's literally it. Like you're in a mountain.
Yeah, I can picture it.
Yeah, and it's the only thing that's different is that during the day, the Shaolin Temple is full of tourists. So you kind of lose that mythical thing. But at some point they leave. They have like there's a cutoff time. And then that's when it looks magical again.
So let's go back. So you wake up.
Yeah. Someone wakes you up.
Okay.
Because you're in a room with other people.
Yeah.
Someone wakes you up. You brush your teeth. You go conditioning. So running. This was before breakfast. Running. Then sprinting up stairs that lead up to the mountain. And then you crawl down on your hands and your legs. And then you just, you do sprints, you do jumps, and then you have breakfast. Because if you had breakfast before that, you would throw up.
Yeah, right. Yeah, of course.
After breakfast, then you practice your basics. So kicking, stretching, and basic movements. Then, you eat again. And then after that, you do your forms. So you learn forms. Wherever you're at in the process of learning, you just practice until there and you practice that again. And then you have dinner. And then after that, you can just practice whatever you want.
Is there time for your mind? Is there time for...
Yeah, you have Sundays off.
Yeah.
And actually
For focus?
It kind of focuses you in a way. It's like moving meditation for me.
Yeah.
So, you get the feeling when someone leaves a gym, they feel really good.
Yeah.
Because they feel like they accomplished something. You may be really tired while you're there, but when you go to bed, you're just like, oh man, what a day.
Yeah. I'm just aware that I said that to myself yesterday after doing 20 minutes on an exercise bike. And you're like, yeah, so I did 11 straight hours of intense exercise. And yeah, you go to bed, you're tired, but you're delighted. I did that yesterday and patted myself on the back for doing, again, 20 minutes.
You know what? I would, if I did 20 minutes now, I would be very proud of myself.
Okay, okay, good, 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 good. Are there, is there, I'm always interested with the intersection between sort of any sort of athletics or sort of martial arts with a career in the arts, in film and TV. Are there principles you learn? Is there discipline? Are there things you learn in that training that you're able to apply to your life?
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, obviously it helps for my stunt work, you know, physically.
Yeah.
Just the training and the work ethic is just lots of training for stunts. You have to maintain the skill, because if you can't do the skill, you're not going to get hired. And you never know when that skill, whatever that may be, will come up. For me, I'm specialized more in fight choreography. So that's something that I'm always keeping sharp. Some people, this is really weird to say, some people are just really good at getting hit by cars.
Oh.
And then that's their thing. You need a guy to get hit by a car, you're gonna call Carl.
Yeah, let's call Carl. Come over.
Come on. You got this one?
We got an Acura coming, Carl. I'm ready, man. I'm ready.
I got you. Let me just... Another one. Didn't I do this already?
But I bet focus. I bet, you know,
yeah,
discipline.
Of course. And also the... I don't know if it's from, you know, it's hard for me to say because I grew up doing martial arts. So I don't know a life without that. So I don't know what.
Go ahead.
What part of martial arts is what's causing this to happen? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I'm a very calm person. And so I never freak out under pressure. I may feel it, but you'll never see it. And I'm very good at keeping my cool. And I think that's part of it as well.
This feels like a moment in your career, doesn't it?
Yes. The moment. The moment, yeah.
What do you mean?
I mean, I've been working so long, just, you know, it's nothing's guaranteed in this industry. Certainly one of the few industries where, or the few career choices where your hard work does not always result in what you define as success. So to be able to, you know, perform on an HBO A24 show with Robert Downey Jr., Park Chan-wook, Sandra Oh, you know, and all these amazing Vietnamese actors. It's just such a, like, I was ready when it happened because my Vietnamese wasn't ready, but my fight choreography skills were ready. Clearly, if Don sneakily added some fight scenes for me. But yeah, I'm just taking it all in. I'm very grateful, you know, not taking anything for granted.
Man, you're a joy to talk to.
Thank you. I mean, it's a pleasure to talk to you.
Fred Wing Khan is an actor and stunt performer from Montreal. You can catch him in the new HBO series, The Sympathizer, also starring Robert Downey Jr. and Sandra Oh. New episodes drop weekly. That's it for us. The other conversation we have up today is, well, this is kind of cool news. We just found out that we won the Gold Award in the very prestigious New York Festival's Radio Awards, and one of the biggest, it's kind of like our Oscars, our Emmys. We won the Gold Award for Best Interview, which is the third time. Not in my nature to talk like this, but it's our third time winning it. Very proud to be part of this team, our third time winning it. And we won it for our conversation with Mick Jagger. So in honor, we reposted the conversation up on our podcast feed. If you missed it the first time, you can start it up. Okay, see you soon. Later on.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.